everyone, and welcome back to the Grid Waters Podcast, episode 3, where we will be reviewing the Portuguese Grand Prix, where Lewis Hamilton has now got the record for the most wins in Formula 1 history. But before we talk about that, I'll introduce to the usual suspects we have on the podcast today. We've got Ken, Rickson, and Alex. Hopefully you're all well. Alex, how are you doing?
I'm not bad. Chilling, drinking my orange juice, because I'm driving later, and I'm good and responsible. Enjoyed the Grand Prix, so it's been a good day.
Good. Rickson, how have you been?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Lewis Hamilton is now the GOAT, and nobody can tell me otherwise.
Officially, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah, we can't tell you otherwise.
you actually can't now.
No, I officially can't, no. And Ken, how are you?
Well, up until Rickson started talking, I was actually quite fine. But,
oh, dear.
Oh, God.
No, I'm joking. No. Just having a beer and looking forward to our weekly discussion about Formula One.
Good. Anyone do anything interesting? I know. Well, I'm officially on lockdown, so I've limited stuff I could actually do. But has anyone else done anything interesting?
There isn't really a whole lot to do, mate, to be honest.
I decorated the room for the baby, but that's not really. I don't know.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is. Going to IKEA is just so much fun on a Saturday.
That's such an adult thing to do.
Sounds like hell.
mate, IKEA is banging. I'm not having that. IKEA is incredible.
On a Saturday, though, I don't know about that, man.
If you need a whole room, fine. If you just need two or three small little things that you have to walk through the entire store, no.
Oh, God, no.
I found out, I was speaking to my mum, and she had a Gap t-shirt on, and as the joke goes, gay and proud. And she proceeds to tell me she went into the shop that day to get this t-shirt, and she went, oh, to one of the employees, oh, does Gap stand for gay and proud? And I was like, to an employee.
Oh, no.
And I was like, mum, no. No, it's just...
That's actually the worst thing I've ever heard.
I know. It was awful.
I'm cringing for her. Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah. So just that a was little, a fun, funny story.
A little throwback to our first or second episode when we said something about Lewis being a massive brand ambassador for Tommy Hilfiger. Didn't Alex say that he wanted a clothing line with Gap?
He did, actually, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
Well, you can't back out now.
I'm fairly certain you said something really similar. Definitely about Gap.
Oh, didn't we say he would be the best to represent Asda by George?
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. You mean George by Asda, by the way.
No, it's different in Wales.
It's just opposite. Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about Formula One. It is a Formula One podcast, so we might as well try and talk about it. Of course, Lewis. 92 wins, the all-time record in Formula 1, beating Schumacher's record of 91 wins. Let's try and get this out of the way quickly because it's...
What do you mean, quickly?
Too much for us to bear?
Yeah.
It was one of the only good things about the whole race. So, you know, okay. No need to cover it briefly. We could spend an hour on it.
I don't know, Stroll retired.
Anyway, well, let's talk about this, right? 92 wins, all-time records, the GOAT officially now, isn't he? So we can't say, we can't deny that anymore. As a Mercedes fan, Rickson, it's another record that he holds, and I mean, it'll go into the hundreds, I'm sure. But you must, I guess, is it a feeling of proudness as a Mercedes fan?
People seem to think that if you're a Lewis Hamilton fan, you're a Merck fan, but it yes, obviously, you know, I'm a massive fan of Lewis because he's a Brit. Obviously, I'm British. That's the main reason I like follow him and want him to do well. But yeah, it's amazing, really, to think that, you know, that record has been there for so long, right? And there's been drivers like Vettel who have got close. Yeah, I think he's got about 52. That's close, but how far away, you know, that he's like, I think he's like fourth, Vettel, and that's in the modern era, that's the second closest we've had to Lewis. And you've just got to think how we're not going to see that record being, if ever. I don't think we'll see it in our lifetime. And even if we do, you know, it's somebody's going to come along and they've got to basically win pretty much every single race that they race in from now on, really. You know, it's a pretty decent milestone, really. I mean, it's like Lewis said when he finished as well, he couldn't have done it without the team. And I know that all especially on Twitter, there seems to be a group of haters really that really don't get, you know, really don't like the fact that he's doing well. But that was the same when Senna was winning every race, when Shumi was winning every race, you know. So there's always going to be a group of people that hate, you know, the person who's winning. I was the same with Seb when Seb was winning, you know. I think that's just how it is, really. But no, I think he's proven again today why he's the GOAT.
Yeah, what Rickson said, like, you know, you're always going to have a group of people who can't, well, or are very passionate about their own driver, but you just have to admit that it's a very impressive record to beat. And yeah, there's always been haters, but in every year of Formula One, but now it just gets a lot closer due to social media. I mean, if you open Twitter, it's always something toxic going on, like, no matter what happens. Even before the race starts, some interviews or statements they make. I mean, it's just like, let's not forget that they are 20 human beings driving absolute monsters of machines to the edge of the limit, and they all deserve respect for doing that. But unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm not a Hamilton fan, but even I can't argue that it's incredible what he's done. It's sad to see Michael's records being beaten one by one, but I mean, someone had to beat them eventually.
Mm. Yeah, no, they did have to be beaten in the end, didn't they? And I mean, it's good to have a Brit doing it. I mean, there's three Brits on this podcast, so it's good to see that.
And I think that's the main thing. Sorry, it's just jumping on, but I think that's the main thing that has, you know, made it so clear that he's, you know, he's a lot better than every other driver, because the fact that if you think about how many British drivers there's been that have done well and have won world championships, you know, and have even just made the sport. I think the majority of the drivers are British, and the fact that there's now one standout driver that's still got seasons left to make it, take his record even further and set a new bench. It's going to be 100 plus easily, you know, give it 2 years maximum, right? That's all he needs. And I think that now that we've got somebody that is my, I wouldn't say it's my favourite sport, but my second favourite sport, the fact that there's now, you know, like a British, it's just a staple of a person that, even though he's not, you know, some of the stuff he does outside of racing, you can question it slightly, you know, he's still absolutely unreal when he gets in that car and starts driving.
Yeah, no, it is a phenomenal achievement to have, and like we've already said, I don't think it's going to be beaten at all.
Can I quickly jump into what Rickson said about British Formula One champions?
Mm-hmm.
The list Hamilton joined, well, he's going to clinch his seventh, but he's in quite a nice list of drivers. It's got, so obviously Hamilton, Button, Damon Hill, Nigel Mansell, Sir Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill, Jim Clark, and John Surtees.
So it's just when you look at that list, and he's going to be at the very top for all young British drivers now. You're looking at him going, if he can do it, you know, I should be able to at least, you know, have a better chance. So he's setting kind of setting the groundwork for future young British drivers, and we've got
we've got
a whole host of them on the grid currently. Not saying that they're all going to be world champions, because they're not, but you know, he's proven that, you know, a young black British driver can win a world championship. If you would have said that, I don't know, 40 years ago, you probably would have got some weird looks, right? So
the thing is, like, mad. From people from my era, like late 80s, beginning of the 90s, we obviously, like, once we got old enough to actually watch and enjoy Formula One, it was all Michael Schumacher. And, you know, it was the same. You liked him, you didn't like him, whatever. But what he did for the sport then was massive for the upcoming years. Like, everyone kept comparing him to Schumacher. I think that's what's going to happen with Hamilton once he retires.
Yeah, and I mean, I think
The next time anyone's going to get close, and I don't see it happening quite quickly, but anyone that gets even close to 85 wins is going to be like, oh, yeah, remember 91, Michael Schumacher. And then I think Lewis is going to go on well beyond 100, but his name is going to keep getting mentioned long after he's retired. So he's going to leave behind a legacy like Schumacher did, like Mansell did, Alonso, Senna.
Beating that record, you have to start from literally your first season. Like Lewis, 2007, he won his first. Like that's pretty much his. I don't know if that was his first year, wasn't it? That's really
yeah, first, that was his first year.
2008
yeah.
was his first championship.
Yeah, so yeah, think about that. 2007, guy wins his first race. Next year, gets his first title. You know, you've just got to think if anybody's going to beat that. I think person that comes to mind is Max. He's the only young person on the grid currently who's going to ever be quick enough to.
He'd be able to do more seasons, isn't he? Because of his age, he'd be able to do more seasons as well, which is going to help a little bit.
He has to start winning championships next season. You know, he has to start winning a lot of races very quickly within the next couple of years. I mean, I think as soon as you start taking out Lewis, Seb, you know, drivers like that, as soon as they all quit and call it a day, it's going to be Max's to go and break, right? But he's got to leave Red Bull or wait for Merck to crumble, you know? That's the only way he's going to do it. Get close.
He gave an interview after the race. It's not yet been tweeted, but it's on the Formula One website, where he's just, you know, admired what Lewis Hamilton did, you know? Like the words he used. He's, like, really positive and, like, you know, obviously acknowledges everything that went into it. But he said, I don't think it stops there. It will go well over 100, like we just said. And he says, so he's pushing me to go until I'm 40 years old or something, but that's good. It's good motivation. So he's like,
if I ever want to be about it now.
Well, it's normal. I mean,
yeah,
it's normal that he looks up to to like one of the best drivers on the grid at the moment and all the records that he's beaten. And he's like, I want to be that guy. That's normal.
That's what you have to do as a driver. Yeah. You know, Hamilton is nearing the end of his career. You know, you don't get 92 wins and be in the middle of it. You know, he's going to be nearing the end of his career. And at the end of the day, the drivers the drivers that are coming up now have got to look to it and just like, that's what I have to do. That's my benchmark. I'm racing against this guy. I want to beat him. And, you know, if you're racing against someone like that week in, week out, it's just going to push you so much harder.
I mean, and when you get given the feeling of you might actually have a chance now, because I think a lot of drivers that, are racing against, not even against Lewis, just against that Merck. That car is so, so much better than the rest of them.
Mm.
And I think, especially Max, I reckon he's thinking, you know, it was like all that stuff that came out a couple of days before the Grand Prix, where they were like, when Merck offered Max to test drive the Merck, and it might have been WTF1 that put out a poll that was saying like who wins if they're in equal cars, and obviously everyone was like, oh yeah, Max would win. But you can't say what I'm saying. Give it a couple of years, I'd probably say he would, you know, but currently no.
Can we agree though, if say for example in a shocking twist of events, Lewis retires next year and Max comes in, do you think he would humiliate Bottas the same way Lewis can?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I think.
I think it was a question. That's a yes. I think Max is the next best driver on the grid.
It would probably be even worse because Max is a very different person to Lewis in terms of he doesn't take any prisoners. You know. Nor does Lewis, but like Lewis will play it down for Bottas, whereas Max just wouldn't. You know, Max would be really aggro with him. You know, he'd be like Vettel and Webber. Whoever is Max's teammate, if he's winning the championship, it's just they've got no chance. You know,
thing is, Lewis has Well, due to him getting consistent results, Lewis has been at this stage at near the end of every Formula One season, where he's like, when he sees someone coming up the inside, where he's like, meh, I can take second. He doesn't have to finish first to clinch his championship. So he's like, meh, I can let him go.
Yeah,
thing is, Max has never been in that position. Every time he sees someone in front of him, he has to pass him.
I think I wouldn't say Lewis will happily take second place, because I don't think you would be a racing driver if you would happily take second place. But
no, but if you see someone coming and you're like, if I don't move or back out now, it's going to cost my race as well.
Oh yeah, Max wouldn't do that.
No, Lewis is the kind of driver that's like, meh, I'd rather take second than a DNF.
Oh, so he's smart and Max isn't. Got ya.
That is pretty much it.
That's basically what you've just said.
Well, a lot of it has to do with maturing. And I know we can't use that thing anymore.
Right.
We can't use that, you know, he's 23 now, but he's never been, Max has never been in that, or any other driver has never been in that luxury position where he's been like, I can take second and still be, you know, be champion. Because he's always been in the underdog position where he has to look forward because there's no one behind him for miles.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just wanted to actually talk about the race because we haven't even had a chance to properly talk about it. Back at the start of the race, of course, was spicy to say the least. We had drivers on cold tyres. The track still very green from being resurfaced recently. It gave us a fantastic start, and it sort of goes, well, maybe we should just eradicate tyre blankets completely, because that would really make things spicy, unless you're on the inside line, which would be like trying to spin your tires on ice on the inside of the grid. But McLaren leading the Grand Prix, which is amazing to see because you haven't seen that for years. Alex, you must have been crimping your pants at the start seeing signs 2 seconds ahead of Lewis Hamilton.
I mean, I was going mental. For starters, I thought it was Norris. I didn't look at the thing because Norris started ahead of signs, I think. Mm. I was like, oh my God, Norris is in second, because I predicted him for a podium. And you all laughed at me, and I'm like, oh God, Norris. And I went, no, it's Sainz in second. And then I saw him again. I was like, Carlos, oh my God. I was screaming in my house. I was going mental. And then, because it wasn't like, oh, one of them spun or they got caught up or something. Strap overtook on pace. At that point in the race, it was on pace. Tires or, you know, whatever. He was faster than the two Mercedes. It was incredible. And bought out a lead as well. I was so happy.
That's
why
it's
so good to see McLaren leading again.
That's why I didn't get why the Mercs struggled. I mean, I thought with the DAS system, they were going to be at an advantage with, you know, not having icy cold tyres. But they struggled. Like, for a second, I thought Hamilton had an issue.
I thought he had an issue as well. I thought he had a real problem with, like, engine or something like that. I thought he was in trouble.
They were on mediums, weren't they? That's why.
Oh, on soft.
Yeah. Mercedes were on mediums, of course, so that didn't help their start. And when it was bitting with rain, new track surface, Mercedes did drop back like Albon's career. I will say that joke for the second time in 2 weeks. We'll talk about driver transfers later on in the episode. But they did drop. I did honestly think they had a big problem at the start, Mercedes. But you know, they came back to the front and they dominated the rest of the Grand Prix. But one driver that needs to go back to driving school was Mr. Lance Stroll after his performance in practice, and then not only getting a warning, I think 5 laps in, he then had a bit of contact with one of your drivers, Alex, at turn one with Lando Norris. I mean, that was a bit scary for Norris going around turn one, and of course Lance Stroll damaging his front wing.
You'd think, you know, McLaren have made their car bright enough, and their car is big enough, and Lance Stroll had just tried to overtake it. You'd think he'd realise that if he turned into an apex, the car would still be there. Apparently not. It was then surprised that the car was there, and he got spun off and damaged, and then ensuing penalties and stuff. It's madness.
The thing is, I was
the same with Max in practice, as you're kind of alluding to, and it's like, Why are you trying to aim for an apex when there's a massive car there? Like, just grow up. Like, it's...
They were saying that because obviously Stroll, both of the times he hit somebody was turn one, And they were saying that it's difficult anyway to get two cars through turn one. Now, I don't know how much truth there is to that, because you can't really, from the camera angles from the TV view, you can't really see it properly.
Mm.
But they were saying that as well, Stroll was getting the majority of his track limits on turn one and turn four. So I imagine what was happening during practice, that was just stupid. That's just because he can't drive. But during the race, I think it was because he could have gone wide. He obviously, you know, he could have gone wide to avoid Norris, but because he was, I imagine, because he was too worried about getting another penalty for track limits, he was trying to hug the apex as much as he could, just forgetting that there could potentially be a car there, and just twats Norris. And just Norris's reaction afterwards. You know, I find it funny anyway, but it was more the fact that he was just kicking up. Right, you know, fair play to him. I've never, you know, if a driver hits somebody in practice, which rarely happens, they don't ever do it in the race, because surely you've learned from doing it the first time and you wouldn't do it again. But if your dad's got billions of money and he's paying for your seat, you know, it doesn't matter. You could just constantly keep messing up. It's an absolute crime that, you know, him staying in that team has potentially meant that George Russell's going to lose his seat in like a trickle down effect. But yeah, he's the worst driver on the grid, I would say. I was going to say
Latifi. I'll back that. What's he done?
He just doesn't have a good enough car. I mean, George Russell is outstanding. He's driving that Williams to pieces. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'd say if. Oh, I don't know. I do want to say that he's the worst driver. He's the clumsiest.
No, I'll back you.
He's the clumsy. I wouldn't say he's the worst. He's the clumsiest driver. There you go. Redeemed.
No, I completely disagree that I think Latifi is the worst driver on the grid.
The clumsiest, though? Stroll is the clumsy. He has the most stupid Grosjean.
Stroll can't drive.
No. Vettel is still on this grid. Captain Spinella is still on the grid. Trying to tell me Lance Stroll spins more than Vettel? No.
That's you don't good... crash into as many people.
Yeah, but he's not clumsy, though, Vettel. He just can't drive.
Oh, he... Well, can't drive and clumsy. I mean, they're pretty much the same thing, aren't they?
Vettel can't drive. He doesn't crash into people on purpose, whereas it looks like that's what Stroll's trying to do.
He has crashed into people on purpose, though, in the past.
Baku, anyone?
Yeah, exactly.
Good point.
Exactly.
Good point.
Back to the race. You know, we've done with Lance Stroll. I wanted to highlight Mercedes' dominance. And you know, alludes to, you know, Lewis Hamilton against 92 wins. They managed to lap everybody. I mean, it's just astonishing how quick that Mercedes is at the moment compared to the rest of the grid. And that's why I think by lap 37, they'd overtaken everybody. And I was like, it's, you know, halfway through this Grand Prix and they've done everybody. It's just, the sport's a bit of a joke at the moment, I'll be honest. And it is really turning me off F1 when a team like that can just dominate so much. It does remind me of the Ferrari years.
It's not their fault. I'm not blaming them. You know, it's one of those things where everybody's just got to pump more money in. I mean, when the budget cap comes in, you know, then it'll probably be more of a level playing field, but I don't think you can, and I'm not saying you are, I don't think you can say the sport is bad just because one team's winning, because that's how it's always been. It's always been Ferrari, Red Bull, Merck, you know, in modern era, all that I've watched.
Braun.
Well, that was, yeah, but when Braun dominated, that was like
BMW one Sabre. Season.
I think everybody was just like, Jesus Christ, like that is impressive in 2009. But I think I've only ever watched it, you know, it properly when Schumi was just calling it a day. And even then, he was still dominating through to Vettel dominating in the Red Bull, through to Lewis and Nico dominating in the Mercedes, right? And I think it's the same. You know, nothing's changed. But I think you just keep on going back to it because you just hope you get that one amazing race, you know. People say, the sport's gone, the sport's bad. You know, Lewis and Merck are just winning everything. But it's always been like that. And I think people need to realise that that's not going to change. The only way they can change it is just give everybody the same car and then the drivers go. But there isn't enough money in that, so that won't ever happen.
Yeah, but you could say that in other motorsports, they do that and it's a lot better.
But there isn't enough money to do it that way. The reason why F1 do so well is because sponsors pay more money to get on the teams that have the better cars because they're winning more. You know, it's like, even though you don't realise it, it you know, makes its way down, you know, the sponsor money or, you know, the money for winning just in general, you know. And there isn't, that's why F1 is bigger than most other motorsports, because there's a lot more money in it, and there's more money in it because the teams can do whatever they like to make their cars faster. Well, not whatever they like, but spend the money wherever they want to make their cars faster.
And I completely agree. It's not Mercedes' fault. It's not Hamilton or Bottas' fault. It's the sports problem where they're allowing so much money to be pumped in. That's why they've got to bring in these budget caps to stop, because, you know, the likes of Williams could, you know, they're on the shoestring budget compared to the likes of Mercedes. And that's why, you know, they're on the back of the grid. I just watch other motorsports and go, you could take so much more. You could take bits out of this other motorsports and make it a lot more entertaining. That's what I'm trying to say is, when you've got, you know, two cars overtaking the whole grid by the halfway point, it shows there's something wrong with the sport.
Can I just chime in and just blame Ferrari for all of this anyway?
I mean, that's a very good point.
Ferrari last season, four poles in a row. But because they're cheating scumbags and can't produce an engine that's legal, they're now, Vettel's way down the grid. Leclerc isn't challenging for wins like he was last season at all. And I'd also like to blame Alex Albon, because Verstappen's won a couple of races this year and Albon's been nowhere near. So, you know, it's a product of those two things.
Yeah. No, and Rickson makes a good point where, you know, Mercedes have got their big budget and they put so much R&D into F1, while Ferrari did that but by cheating. And then Red Bull, I think they're still developing with Honda, and they're not there yet. And then Honda pulling out, which is another problem in itself. So, yeah, it's just frustrating from a fan's point of view. That's all I'm trying to say, really, by them overtaking everybody twice within half a race. And I just hopefully next year will be a bit closer. That's all I'm hoping for.
Yeah. I mean, I'd go... 2022 is probably the one where it's going to be close.
Next year
is going to be slaps from Lewis or Bottas.
No, let's be real here. It's not going to be
Bottas. It's going to be only if Red Bull come out with the most amazing car you've ever seen. It's going to be Lewis again, which I'm happy with. But I know Ollie will just just turn it off and never watch it again. So
I know at this rate, I'm not going to turn up for this podcast. You have to do it by yourself while I'll be watching Rallycross or an endurance event, because I'm just not interested in F1 anymore. But hopefully, like I said, I think we'll have to wait another year for it. But hopefully it gets a bit better. But one thing that, you know, even without the whole dominance of Mercedes, Portugal as a track.
Great track.
Fantastic.
Great
amazing
track.
The undulations and everything are incredible.
Yeah, no, it's a great addition. I'd say replace Spain with this one.
Ooh.
I'll go with that.
We already go Spain for testing, and it's meh for testing.
But testing is great for a race.
But every race has been eh. Well, apart from 2016, because of the Merckx crashing out, but you can't hope for someone to crash out to make it interesting.
Or 2012.
Pastor.
Or 2012, yeah. But you can't expect, or you can't, you know, need to hope for a crash to make a race interesting, or a safety car, or a red flag. It's just meh. But if we do go back to Portimao, they have to adjust the DRS.
Yes.
Yeah.
Turn one was just, I was like, when did that Renault get so slow, or when did that car get so quick? But it's just DRS slipstream, whoop.
It was pretty easy to overtake at turn one, but regardless, yeah, with those changes, you know, making sure they bolt down the drains as well.
Oof. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they're going to do it again because it was a bit of a botch job on Saturday afternoon, having them pop up. And we saw how badly the damage was. Yeah. George Russell's car last year, wasn't it, at Baku?
Yeah, someone just ripped from the FIA, like, oh, sorry to interrupt you. But someone from FIA said, yeah, we've never seen this happen before. And I was like, did you really? Because it happened last year with Russell, and then it happened with a Haas as well. Yeah, with Grosjean.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it was Malaysia.
Yeah, Malaysia.
Yeah,
it's
the
first time we saw this happen, and I was like, yeah, that's a lie.
Yeah. So outside of the Grand Prix weekend, we've got lots to talk about, especially the driver transfer market, which is all over the place at the moment. And Rickson, you know a little bit more than the rest of us, so hopefully you can enlighten us a little bit about what's happening and who's moving where.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I mean, look, lads, I'll be honest. Transfers is the tastiest bit, right? You know, we've all been slagging off Alex for doing terrible, saying Stroll shouldn't drive. So what I've done, right, is we've got every single team that's on the grid next season, and obviously going to do a quick rundown of who's going to be driving, and then I want to know from you boys and some of the guys listening, I want to know who you think should get the seat in certain teams. Now, I know that a couple of teams like Haas, obviously we heard that Kevin and Grosjean are not going to be driving there next season, so that opens two lovely spots in. Seems like the most toxic team on the grid. But we'll start with Merck. Obviously, we all know Bottas is there for 2021. Lewis hasn't signed anything yet. There's a free seat in Merck currently. If we're going off it right now, Hamilton hasn't signed. But if obviously he will. But if he doesn't, who's going in it? Quick fire.
George Maldonado. Russell.
Names. Russell. I heard George Russell. I heard... what was that? I saw.
Max.
I
think if Lewis calls it a day, like we said earlier, I think Max is lapping up that seat. I think Merck would be crazy to not go for Max. So obviously now we've got the famous Ferrari. Now I think reading by my notes here, obviously Charles is going to keep his seat for next year, and they've also got Carlos Sainz. I'm excited about Sainz, but also. The Ferrari's kind of a downgrade. I don't know if you'd ever say that. He's kind of going from he could potentially get some podiums this season, so probably hasn't got a chance. But obviously, you know that they're going to turn it around in the off season. So hopefully, they've got a decent car. I do like Sainz as a person, as a character. You know, he's always trying to stay happy. So I feel like him winning or even him on the podium more often. Next season would be good. So Red Bull, obviously we know these guys are probably the biggest talking point because you've got Max who's obviously signed through for the next couple of years. So obviously he's going to stay in that Red Bull car. And I know we spoke about it on last week's podcast, but who partners Max next year? I mean, it's probably not going to be Alex and it's probably not going to be Gasly just given how well he's doing in that Toro Rosso car or AlphaTauri, sorry, Jesus. So I'm putting it back out there again. Quick fire, I just want names. Who's taking that next Red Bull?
If Max stays at Red Bull, Hülkenberg. If Max goes to Mercedes because Lewis retires, it's going to be Perez. Perez doesn't want to be a number two.
Ooh, it's going to be Hülkenberg. It's going to be Hülkenberg.
Ole?
Mantle. No. I think it's...
Quick fire. Don't think about it. Just say it.
I don't know. I think it's going to be Gasly.
Gasly. I would agree and say that they're going to, as I mentioned last week, they don't ever go from outside their driver.
Well, Marco said this week they will.
Yeah, but that's only because he's angry because his second driver is bad. I nearly swore.
Sorry. Yeah.
I'm going to say Gasly. I think he's put himself in a very good place to get that seat. But I think because you're driving against the second best driver on the grid, it's going to be very, very difficult to make yourself look good. Next up is McLaren. Obviously, keeping Norris and Danny Ric. I think that is very, very good. I feel Danny Ric and Norris two really, really good together as teammates. Yeah, and that car is looking very, very quick. And I think if they get best of the rest out of the midfield teams, you know, they're gonna be in very good stead for you know, not wins, but more top threes, top fives. Yeah. They're gonna be looking very good. I think Danny Rick needs a car that he can drive the wheels off, and I think that McLaren's gonna give him a very good chance. Now, new boys slash old boys, Alpine or Renault, as we know them. Obviously, you've got Nando going over there, which is going to be he's a bit old, I'll be honest.
Boring. It's going to be boring, I think.
But he knows what he's doing. I think he's going to be good, you know, to make the car better, because he's going to know how to drive it and what needs to be changed. And obviously, Ocon is keeping his spot there for next year. So that's going to be, again, you know, I think that's a solid lineup. I think Ocon's going to learn a lot off Nando. So I think it's just the case. I think they're going to stay the same as they have this year in terms of the drivers. You know, I think Nando's good coming in to swap with Danny Rick in terms of, you know, how good they are now. I would say they're maybe Danny Rick's very, very slightly better. But yeah, we will see. Nobody knows with Nando, he's nuts. So yeah, I think Renault next season are in very good stead. Now, another one that we'll go to is AlphaTauri. Now, obviously, this all changes depending on what Red Bull do with, or go with, sorry. Now, in my notes, I know I said that Gasly would go to Red Bull, but what I actually wrote down was that Gasly would stay at AlphaTauri.
Same.
And that Albon would go down to work on his craft, but
I don't know.
I would like to see Gasly get a better drive than that. And then I've also said that if Albon stays at Red Bull, I think Kvyat will keep his seat. But the way that program works, you're never tied down to more than 1 year, and you could be out. But there's also that F2 driver
now, Tsunoda.
Yeah, I don't know.
Tsunoda.
I have no idea how to say his name.
He's backed by Honda.
Yeah, so we're saying he's a, you know, possibly. But that is I would say that's for a couple of seasons yet.
Yeah, not yet.
No, I think he's in. Kvyat's gone, Gasly. I know I said Gasly to Red Bull, but I think Gasly might stay and Hulkenberg might get Red Bull. Albon's out completely.
Ooh.
I don't rate him.
I don't think anybody rates it. But the thing is that it's the curse of the second Red Bull seat, because Gasly looked terrible when he was in that Red Bull. But then you put him back in a car that he actually enjoys driving and take all the pressure off him. You know, he's doing well. I think AlphaTauri are going to be the hardest team for people to guess. I think it's one where we've just got to give it a couple of seasons, and then we'll have a solid lineup, I think, for them now. But they're always going to be a junior team, so it's an afterthought, really, for Red Bull. Now, another new team coming in, Aston Martin. So obviously Racing Point are going to be changing over from the pink of Racing Point to the lovely British Racing Green, Aston Martin, which I'm looking forward to. Obviously, they've got Vettel on the grid, and Stroll's going to be staying there. I cannot believe Stroll's keeping that seat. It's absolutely nuts, even though his dad's got millions of pounds or whatever. It's not fair. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a solid team. Hopefully, it gives Vettel a chance to get back on his feet, get some good, just score some points, man. He scored a point today, I think, you know. Needs to be able to score. I think they're going to be very middle of the road, but nobody knows how good that car is going to be. And two more, just to quickly get through them. Alpha, I think they're going to try and keep Kimi Raikkonen, from what I've heard. Now, Alpha are very out in the open, similar to Haas, because they don't have a solid team yet. But I did hear today that they're going to keep Gio, which is fantastic. It's apparently, you know, because he's still a very good driver. I think he, in that Alpha, you haven't got enough really to challenge for points similar to the Haas. So I think you've got a bundle of drivers in F2 that makes sense to go into that car. I know Mick has been quoted to potentially go and drive for that car, but it's also been the same for Haas. So again, I think Alpha and Haas, we can put them both together. I think they're going to be looking, they're going to be out on the driver's market trying to pick up the scraps. So I don't know what you guys think about Alpha. I mean, they're going to be, they're going to have to pick somebody from F2 and then partner them with either Kimi or Gio.
I think they're going to keep it the same as it is this year.
That's fair.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Well, Haas will get two new, Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin.
Yeah, that's the one that's been...
Yeah,
for Haas, that's the one that's been getting the most traction. Almost seeing them as a kind of like a junior team, Haas, this is, in a sense. But yeah, we'll see. I think that's up in the air. One of the ones that I did, I don't often listen to the post-race show, but I was just lapping up Lewis being the GOAT, so... they were talking to Perez about potentially going to Haas, and he said he hasn't ruled it out, but he obviously wouldn't tell us if he hadn't spoke to them either. So they either, you know, do everything they can to sign Perez and then get a F2 driver, or they are just smart and get two F2 drivers and have another off season where they don't even try and go for points and just try and build these young drivers up. But I think Haas is the most difficult one. I mean, now that they know that they have to get two new drivers in, I'm looking forward to see, you know, who they're going to take, really. They've got a lot of different options. But I think Mick is either in an Alpha or a Haas, really.
Mm. Yeah, he's got a seat almost confirmed, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty much
I've just read a rumour. But obviously, it's just a rumor that circled around the paddock that Pierre Gasly might escape the Red Bull program to replace French countryman Esteban Ocon at Renault.
Jesus. I can see that happening.
But yeah, Renault.
It hasn't really been given a chance yet, Ocon, I don't think.
Well, it's Renault. They just want a Frenchman, whether it's Ocon or Gasly.
Yeah, true.
Mind.
Yeah.
The one team you didn't mention was Williams.
I'm not finished yet.
jumping the gun, apologies.
One team that I didn't mention was Williams, that had actually said that they were signing Russell and Latifi for 2021. But obviously, we all know that Perez could be going to Williams now, which throws everything, you know, throws a spanner in the works, as they say. I think they'd be mad. They'd be mad to let George Russell go. He's overperformed in that car, and it's nuts. You know, he's nearly scoring points in a car that it should be, you know, very, very back of the pack. So I think they'll be mad to do that, but they'll probably do it because Perez, you know, he's driven more races, scored more points, got podium finishes. I think Russell will probably go to Merck as a test driver or something along those lines. But what I did read that is Russell is instead for a drive with Merck or Aston Martin when the new regs come in 2022, which I can see. But because he hasn't got a lot of moolah, hasn't got a lot of cash, he's just got skill, which is still seems so odd to me that you can have money and not skill and get a drive, but that's just how the sport is. So Williams, I think personally, George Russell's going to get sacked off and they're going to put Perez in that car, which again is mad, but it's just money. And I feel like that's the best way to do it. Latifi does not deserve to drive an F1 car. He's terrible. So I don't know. What do you boys think about the lineup for next year in general?
I'm excited about Haas, the fact they're finally changing their lineup after so long. So that's going to be quite exciting. I'm excited to see what Danny Ric can do in that McLaren and what Sainz can do in that Ferrari. I think it's going to be a really good season for drivers to prove what they can do. I think it'll be really good.
Well, I second what Alex said. And also, if Max does stay at Red Bull, I just want him to have a competent teammate so that they can battle the Mercs or whoever it might be ahead of him.
I think
he hasn't got a rear gunner or anything.
No, I don't think we're going to see any drastic changes till 2022, but it would be good to see, you know, some younger drivers come into the spot. I know we had a couple of years ago, obviously, we had Norris and Charles and George come in, you know, and I think we need that again. Looking forward to the racing next year. Hopefully we can go to a Grand Prix, because I still have never been to one. So hopefully we can get by the track again, get fans back in, have a proper season, and let's see some new talent, really.
On to our next story. It's across to our designated foreigner, Mr. Sesemba. What's your story?
Yes, well, we all know that now that F1 has started again and all other branches of motorsport, obviously with the Rona going on, they have to do a lot of mandatory testing. But it seems it's not fail-proof, as they found out in MXGP, which is motocross.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Well, I don't know. It could be that you don't really follow sports on two wheels. Honestly, watch it. It's brilliant. Okay. But there's a Spanish driver there called Jorge Prado. So they had a race. Let me see. It was actually really quick after one another. So they had a race on Sunday the 18th. Then Saturday, Sunday, then Tuesday, Wednesday, and then again this weekend. So three, how would you call it? Three heats, let's put it that way. And he was tested Wednesday before his race. But he already had raced one then before that. So he tested on Wednesday, he got the result on Saturday, and turned out he was positive. But he raced on Wednesday. He won the race, but apart from that, you know, he's on his bike on his own. But he did come into contact with his team and everyone else in the paddock, because, you know, a motorsport paddock is like one big bubble. That's why they have to get tested so often. So now they're a bit panicky, because they're like, yeah, he wandered around here for 2 days. Who has he come into contact with? Who has got it now? Do we need to shut the entire paddock down?
Oh dear.
What are we going to do? So he didn't get a chance to race this weekend. They just said, you know, don't. Because he said, you know, I followed every precaution. I went home, only did my training, then to the track, and then straight back home. But apparently during the press conference, they could see that he didn't look, you know, 100%.
Oh, dear.
Oh, really? Was that noticeable?
That's not good.
Yeah, and then, well, he didn't look very well there, and then obviously afterwards he said, well, yeah, I wasn't feeling so great. But he now he has to keep getting tested and wait until it's negative.
So they must have to do tons of tests for the whole MXGP paddock then.
Yeah, obviously they test before every race, but because they have a race midweek, like in Formula 1, they test on Thursday and Sunday, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
But obviously here they had a race Saturday, Sunday, and then, or the event was Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday, Sunday. So he had to wait for his results. So he was positive.
Oh dear. Well, I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, they think he caught it on the first event, which was last weekend.
Okay.
So then the 2 days that he was there, Tuesday, Wednesday, he'd been talking to press, to other riders, to this and that. And then, you know, obviously, yeah, they do wear masks, but
Yeah, it's not good.
Well, he's from a KTM, and they tested everyone, and the rest of the team is negative, and he's gone into isolation now.
Okay, it's not the end of the world for KTM then.
No, they're fine. But imagine if, by some weird twist of fate, the entire paddock.
You have to
cancel future races. The money of, I mean, it's not Formula One, but still, it's a massive, massive money sport.
It's not going to be cheap, is it?
Yeah.
Well, luckily it's not happening in F1, because otherwise, you'd be losing more money. Imagine.
Yeah, yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah. So, Alex, what is your story this week? I believe it's to do with our residential French driver in the F1 paddock.
Yeah, so mine's a nice little short story, but I still find it quite funny. So obviously it was announced this week that both K-Mag and Romain Grosjean would be leaving Haas after, you know, 5 years. And obviously Romain put out a very sort of, you know, heartfelt Instagram post about how, you know, he'd been there for the time and how much he enjoyed it and building the team and everything. And so this is a post about him leaving the F1 team, it has become his most liked Instagram post ever. So what that shows to me, and probably to him, is that everyone's quite happy about the fact he's leaving.
Basically.
That's what that shows is, I like that. That's good.
He's always seemed to be a meme of F1 over his tenure in F1. I mean, he's got the old podium. But he doesn't help himself at all.
No.
We saw in Belgium where he crashed out.
Where he just floored it.
Yeah, Spain.
The entire track.
When he crashed by himself under safety car.
That's what I mean. And he doesn't help himself because he goes, "Oh, look at me. I make Lego models at home." And you're just like, mate, come on. You're not selling yourself very well here unless you're trying to sell to Lego and trying to get a sponsorship. But I wouldn't say I'm sad to see him leaving. And as you mentioned in that post, not many other people are, you know, that fussy to leave.
Too upset.
No, exactly.
Would anyone fancy a guess in since 2009, but he had a gap year in 2010. Would anyone like to have a guess how many DNFs he had?
34.
You're on the low end there.
Oh,
55.
No, that's a bit high. 42 okay. DNFs, including one DSQ.
So hello and welcome to everyone's favourite part of the episode. That is Two Truths, One Lie, where I tell three stories or three facts or three anythings. Two of them are lies, one of them is true. So, you boys ready?
As ready as we'll ever be.
Yeah.
Perfecto. So, first one. Every driver with a surname Hill to have entered the Formula One World Championship has never failed to win it. So every single one with the surname Hill who's entered it has won the Formula One World Championship.
Oof.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big one. Second one. Not even related in any way, shape, or form. Adrian Sutil. Who remembers him?
Mm-hmm.
He was a talented pianist at one point. And as a kid, he was playing stage concerts at the age of 10.
Okay.
Oof. Third one. So, onboard cameras. Now we're very accustomed to onboard cameras. They are a very big part of our viewing experience. They weren't fitted to F1 cars for a race. They were fitted in testing for this, but they weren't fitted for a race until the 1986 German Grand Prix.
Oof.
Okay. Ken, do you want to go first?
I'm just amazed how much shorter these are than mine. I really went overboard.
I know. I was like, short, sharp. What do you think?
Yeah. What? Oof.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, so British Formula One drivers with the surname Hill.
Not necessarily British.
Oh, all right. Right, so
I can give you their names. Graham and Damon, obviously father and son, and Phil Hill, who I believe was from New Zealand.
Oof. Adrian Sutil being a pianist, that could. I mean, some drivers in the F1 paddock have some skills that you're like, wait, really? And third one was onboard cameras. Nah, that's got onboard cameras got to be a lie because they have onboards from Senna.
86, not 96, 86.
Ah. I still think that's a lie because I've seen some old pictures. Nah, that was a lie. I'm going to go with Sutil being a pianist.
So I reckon that one's the truth?
Yeah, that one's the truth.
Okay, all right. Ollie?
The first one, well, only people with the surname Hill have won the world championship. They've all, sorry, all won
the
world
championship. Yeah, every single one with the surname championship.
So you've got Graham and
Damon
and Phil. Both won. Phil Hill.
Sounds like a fake name, doesn't it?
I don't think a New Zealander has won the F1 world championship. I'm not, so I don't believe that one. Still being a pianist, he is German.
And was playing stage concerts at the age of 10.
The only reason I think that one's true because I recently saw, because I was watching the old Le Mans laps of in the 60s, where they put a big ass camera in the back of the Jaguar as a test lap while I commentated. And the next video along was Jackie Stewart at Zandvoort, and he was racing with a camera. So I think the second one is the truth. So Till was a pianist at the age of 10 and had played concerts.
Great minds think alike.
So you're both thinking Adrian Sutil.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you now, the onboard one was false. It was a 1985 German Grand Prix.
What?
I catch you out by that one.
Oh, I thought it was a lot earlier.
Yeah, way earlier than that.
In a race, in a race weekend, 1985 German Grand Prix. First guy that had it was a guy called Francois Hasnault, fitted to his Renault. Huh.
All right.
Okay.
How much did that affect him? Because obviously cameras weren't as lightweight as they were now.
Don't know. No idea. So should we move on to Adrian Sutil then? As this is kind of...
I'm hoping it's true now.
Same.
He was a talented pianist as a kid. But... However...
Ah!
He was playing stage concerts at the age of 12.
Ah!
Which means that every Formula One driver that's entered with the surname of Hill has won the Formula One World Championship.
Wow.
God damn it.
I would have believed it up until Phil Hill, because that sounds like a name you check yourself in a dodgy hotel. It sounds so fake.
Yeah.
I'm Phil Hill, which at the time, I think he won it in the, I think he won it in the 70s, I think.
So we can Google now, yeah? Because we know we lost.
Yeah. I'm Googling it now. I just can't find where.
1961. How do you expect us to know that?
Yeah, he's one of the first Formula One drivers, because, well, official, because the championship didn't start till...
Yeah.
30... Oof. No. 70 years of F1, so it was at 1958 was the first year of F1, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, he's an American, and he's only one or two Americans ever to be world champion. Do you know who the other one is?
Mario Andretti?
Yes, nice one.
He happened to come up in this Google, in this this Wikipedia search.
Hey, you
let
you had him.
But it does not say... oh, no, yeah. It says, yeah. He's the only American born to win F1 World Driver Championship. Mario Andretti and Phil Hill. Happy days. So the final section of the podcast is, of course, what to watch. And this week it was Ken's choice. So, Ken, you decided to pick the Williams F1 documentary.
Yes. Really nice documentary. Obviously, Williams being bought now. It's sad to see, well, not really the name disappear, but it was one of the last teams whose family name was on the building actually owned it. Documentary is on Netflix in certain countries if you want to watch it, and I highly recommend you do, because it shows the beginning of Frank Williams, you know, just the struggles, how expensive it is to get into Formula One, then up to, you know, actually being successful, the technical innovations that suddenly... I mean, there's one race, it was Silverstone, where they showed up, were the last ones to do a lap, and they were, at the end, I think, 7 seconds quicker than anyone else, just because they had some fairings on the side. I never knew that. I knew the fairings were on the car, but I never knew they were the first ones to come up with it, because they had an engineer, I think his name was Phil Head, or Philip?
Patrick Head.
Patrick Head, that's one, sorry.
You've got Phil Hill in your head, haven't
you? Yeah, I still got Phil Hill in my head. Patrick Head came on, and apparently he wasn't really... apparently he scared some people in the factory. But he was a genius. Like, he took a struggling team to multiple Formula One World Championships. And it's nice to see, obviously, the rise and then fall again after Frank's accident. But it doesn't only focus on the sport, also on the family aspect, because obviously Claire Williams, team principal at the moment. They don't spend too much time on the accident. If you think it's, if you feel like, oh, I don't want to watch something dramatic, well, don't. It's really a nice sport documentary about really, well, I would say a really influential Brit in Formula One. What do you guys think?
Okay.
I thought it showed how much of an ass Frank Williams was.
to his drivers or to everyone?
I think everyone. I think he was a real arsehole. I'm being brutally honest now. He was a dick to his wife. I mean, he was a dick to his wife. He cheated on her. He didn't spend any holidays with his family. I can understand passion. And I can understand dedication. But just disregard your family like that?
Yeah.
And it also showed a lot. Quite a selfish man, you know. His drive back, he didn't have to drive that fast back. And I don't remember the guy's name, the head of the sponsors. Was saying slow down. You know, it's just completely ignored it. And it was, you know, don't get me wrong, good documentary. And the rise and fall of Williams, but it really highlighted how. It highlighted his dedication, but it also highlighted his flaws as well as a man, as a team principal in F1.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff you find out in there that you didn't know. I'm not going to, you know, spoil too much, but the one thing that I got from this is that so when you think of Williams as a team, you think of Frank Williams, and that's the guy that, you know, made it all happen and kept it going, but. What I got from it is actually the main reason that team probably did keep going for us, obviously with Frank at the helm and then Claire afterwards and all of that, was actually from Ginny, from Frank's wife, who I think was kind of always there when Williams as a team needed her.
Yeah.
And Frank's amount. That's what I mainly got from it. And that actually she was probably the most influential person in that team. You know, you could say obviously Frank started the team and he got Patrick Head as a designer, but none of that would have kept going if she wasn't there for all of it and kept it all. She was almost the unpaid manager and just kept it all going.
Backbone of the team.
Of the team that didn't show her face apart from one trophy, constructed trophy collection. And that was it.
Well, you see, I compared it a bit, obviously not the same, but like, Niki Lauda's wife, she was really important in his recovery and his eventual decision to retire. And I saw a bit the same with Frank Williams. I also kind of like that they had interviews with their former drivers like Mansell and Nelson Piquet. Yeah. Because it was just a different era, wasn't it? You know, your driver's having a few beers and smoking a few cigarettes after a race. You can't see that happening now. And that's why I love documentaries from that era. Obviously, Rush, Williams. I don't know if there are any others, but if not, I'm sure we'll
find out. And things like that.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll watch them. But yeah, we all highly recommend giving it a watch because it does give a real insight into the world of Williams and the world of Formula One of the past.
Yeah.
That you don't get to see very often these days.
But it's a bit too much closed off now.
Yes, it is. And that's another point why F1 is less appealing to me. But that's a discussion for another day. But thank you, everybody, for listening to the podcast once again. If you are new, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on YouTube or follow us on iTunes, Spotify, and Podomatic. We really appreciate anyone who gives us a follow. And if you've got any questions or any comments on what we can do differently in the podcast, let us know in the description or tweet us at GridWatchersPod on Twitter and we'll hopefully get back to you. But thank you for Alex, Ken, and Rick for joining me on the podcast. And we'll be back next week, actually, because it is the third Italian Grand Prix of the season.
Imola.
It's called Imola, something. Yeah. It's not called the Italian Grand Prix. It's called something else, but yes.
Is it the red Ferrari 70th Grand Prix, Prancing Horse Grand Prix, or something like that?
Something like that.
It will officially be the... Wait, that can't be correct, can it?
What?
Here we go. Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix 2020.
Well, there we go. I'm glad you pronounced it because Alex or I would have botched it.
I'd have butchered it. It'd have been awful.
Well, it's next week, and don't forget the race is earlier.
Yes.
If you're UK based, it's 10 past 12.
Thank you. Perfect. Ken, where we should be able to tell our audience that, but obviously you know better than us.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Well, if you're not from the UK, it's 10 past one.
There we go. Oh, there we go. Central Europeans, it is 10 past one. But yeah, thank you again for listening, and we'll see you very soon, in a week's time actually, for another podcast here at Grid Watchers. Thank you very much for downloading, and we'll speak to you very soon. Good night.